Este episodio es presentado por Hill's Pet Nutrition. Cada mascota en adopción merece una segunda oportunidad y tú lo haces posible cada día, porque cuando le das Hill's a tu mascota, alimentas a una mascota en adopción, lo que las hace más sanas, felices y más aptas a ser adoptadas, cambiando sus vidas para siempre para que puedan cambiar la tuya. Más de 14 millones de mascotas en refugios alimentadas y adoptadas. Es gracias a la ciencia. Conoce más en hillspet.com/podcast.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, what up, it's Meghan Trainor.
Yo, this is Justin Bieber.
Hey, it's Ariana Grande. Just the Interviews, a Zach Sang Show exclusive podcast.
What's mine is yours.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind.
Not the other way around.
No, it is both. It goes both ways.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Zach, then you can have those shoes.
You're right.
Take them right off.
It's the day. This is it. This is the day.
I'm going to do today.
The problem with these shoes, the real interesting thing about these shoes is people are always like, what happened to your foot? Because I think there's like a medical vibe to them. So people are always like, oh my God, is everything like
an air cast?
Yeah, that's like the, that's mostly what I talk about. Yeah. Most of my day is spent like telling people my feet are okay. And they're not really, so that's the like greatest part about it. They're just like not that okay.
What's wrong with your feet?
You know, I don't know. I mean, they're not great feet. They're fine, I guess. I don't know.
I feel the same exact way. I don't think they're that ugly, but if I have to look at, like if you said you have the choice to look at your feet or not look at your feet, I choose not look at my feet 10 out of 10.
I went down like a crazy route where I, on Warped Tour, we were on Warped Tour for a whole summer, and I basically like wore the same socks all summer. And I like ruined my feet. I got like crazy,
like what
fungus in my nails,
ingrown crazy nails.
Crazy. I had to go through like a crazy process to get it undone.
Yeah.
So to me, I have like Giselle's feet now. We're like on the Tom Brady vibe, you know, whatever. But I have like great feet for compared to how bad they were. You know, if
it's
I had a before,
relative.
I got to show people like a before and after because I like feel great about them now.
Question, when you were choosing to wear only one pair of socks for an entire summer, did you have the means to own another pair of socks?
Well, the whole thing was that you just don't have, on Warped Tour, you didn't have the means for any, like there was no laundry to be done. There was no, you know what I mean? So it was just like, and we were just like these like trashy kids. So it was just like.
Were you bus or van at this point?
We were bus, but like the worst possible, like the first bus you could get. So it was like heat on in the summer and like, oh God, it was brutal, man.
And you didn't think to bring an extra pair of socks.
I'm sure I started. No, I don't know. I probably packed myself, so I probably didn't start with that many. But, like, you know, it's like you're trying to get socks for free from, like, I don't know, Monster. I'm sure they had socks or something. You know what I mean? Like, I need those four Loco socks. The five Loco socks. You know what I mean?
Five Loco.
You know?
Like five toes.
Yeah. I'm going like.
I like it.
I'm going above and beyond. You know what I mean? Five Loco.
When you think of those moments, do you think back with fond memories or is it like, oh, I could have done this differently or I wish I would have done this back then?
I think it gets you remember it weird, right? Because like for me, it was all compressed. So it's like a lot of big things that happened in like little moments where you're just like, you're next to like Rihanna at the VMAs. And then, you know, like, it's like, so it's like, it's all compressed in with like, then you're like barfing at a rest stop on Warped Tour. You know, like it's all compressed together. So it's like, unless the other guys in the band are here, it's hard to like even kind of like figure them out. And you like remember them wrong otherwise. You know what I mean?
I totally understand that. Because it's your view of a universe that everybody was a part of. You had a huge group around you on that journey.
Yeah. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to remember. Like you don't really stop and think about how much your perspective really, the past is like a funny thing, right? So like I read this great little like dumb silly thing on like what I don't know medium.com. I don't remember what it was, but like basically they were like, okay, the company that makes the solid state boosters for the space shuttle, they wanted to make bigger solid state boosters, right? But they couldn't fit them. They ship them on a train. They couldn't fit them through the tunnel. You couldn't fit them through the tunnel because the tracks are only 4 feet by 5 inches wide. The tracks are 4 feet by 5 inches wide because the English built the tracks and the English built them in that size. And they built them in that size because that's the size that carriages were. Mm-hmm. And they just built them the same size as carriages. And carriages were that size because they needed to ride in the wheel ruts of European roads, which were designed by the Roman army. So like the space shuttle rocket boosters can only be a certain size because two Roman army horses fit in between their wagon. You know what I mean? Which is like 1,000 years ago or whatever, like 800 years ago or whatever, which is wild.
And it's,
you know,
just
what I mean,
to transport them, right? Like that's the only thing. You need to be able to get it through this tunnel that is a certain size.
Yeah. And it's only this size because it's like arbitrary, but it like fit the Roman war horses, which is like kind of crazy. It's just like funny how the past like isn't, you know, it's the past, but it's not the past. And it's like, I think about it in terms of like what your perspective is. Sometimes like if you talk to somebody, like I'll talk to somebody else in my band and they're like, it was like this and like this. And I'm like, that's like not how it was, but like maybe it is kind of how it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's your version of
it. It's your version of it.
But has there been moments as you guys have, and I really want to dive in, dear future self, hands up, what are you calling it?
What am I calling it? Man, we like start with like all these like, you know, like we'll call it like the, you know, we'll call things like the ska, like it'll be named like the ska song, or then it turns like into like a ska dance, and then it's named, you know, like all of our names are like whatever, and then we start like trying to call the song a name on a set list. Like our set list is filled with the real song names, but then we have our old, we can't remember, you can't play them.
Hold on. So you're saying you have you and the band look at your songs and you have a totally different name than the,
for a lot of them,
than the one, yeah, the public.
Yeah, yeah, for a lot of them. Because they start as like these other things, you know what I mean? Like going back to like the past, you know what I mean? It's like the Roman Warhorse ass song.
So whatever you originally named the file when it was created, yeah, essentially stick, that's the name for you forever?
Lots of times, especially if we talk about it a bunch. Like if we talk, wow, about the song a bunch, it'll be, you know, yeah.
That's real, but that's,
I like, was like the other day I was talking about, so we have this song on the greatest, on our greatest hits or whatever, like called Bob Dylan. And I was sitting here talking to my buddy, and I was like, you know, Patrick's like, he's not sure about Bob Dylan, and like, he doesn't know about Bob Dylan, all this stuff. A friend who worked intimately on the song, and he was like, oh yeah, I wouldn't expect him to like Bob Dylan. He's just like an artist that I wouldn't, I was like, it's like, definitely not. I was like, this is so weird how, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But by the way, like, people always say you create music for you at first, and then totally, it's for the rest of the world.
Totally.
This really does solidify that in my mind.
Totally. And it's like the song is what you think the song is until other people experience it, and then it becomes, you know, like you look at it with like Drake or something, and I'm like, it's like the public decides the singles. They decide, yeah, like when songs are like, this song, I guess, just is the single because they like this song.
With Dear Future Self, at what point do you find the name for it? Is it once the song is written that it kind of just kind of stands out?
Yeah, but lots of times like we'll have like, we have songs that we called like the summer song because it was like reminded us of something, you know, like it's just like whatever, you know what I mean? This one, what were we, I can't remember, what were we calling it? We might have just been calling it, I think we were calling it Dear Planet Earth, because that was like originally a different lyric in it, so we might still call it that. I don't even know, which is no longer a lyric in it, so that makes zero sense.
How did this record start? Who does it start with? A piece from a guitar? Does it start with production? Does it start with a lyric?
This one, I think, actually more started with the idea of the hook. Like I talked about it a little bit, but like to me, for our band, the ultimate song for our band would be like that we could, I think, play or like theoretically be a part of is a song like Hey Ya, because it's like perfectly crafted in the way where you're like, it's like a throwback, but it's the future, and it's like, you know what I mean, it's like, yeah, one of those weird, and it's weird, but like it's like a timeless song, and like, so you're always in search of that, but that's like the one that's like up here, and we're chasing that. And I think this song kind of started with the beat, and it started a little bit with the idea of doing like the surf guitars, which is a kind of a return to the song we did, Uma Thurman. Yeah. And should I be listening on headphones? My voice sound crazy?
No, you sound great.
Am I having a lot of voice cracks?
No. It's, by the way, well,
could I be on air here?
Yeah.
Could I get a seat?
You only come
on the panel in Hollywood? Oh my God, I sound crazy. One.
No, you sound good.
Or are these the headphones?
Yeah.
I don't know.
What?
Am I moving through to Hollywood?
Yeah, you are.
Like a vote?
Golden, yep, ticket. No, but you have a group of people around you, so you have to learn how to balance responsibility so you don't look like a crazy manager or crazy tyrant, right?
I mean, we're all crazy, I think, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and I try not to micromanage, but like last night I like I took my kids to horror nights, and I was like, all right, first we're doing this maze, and then we're like, and they're like, Jesus Christ, let's just like go and see how it is. I'm like, no, you gotta like, you know, like, it's like, it doesn't need to be like that. It's okay. Yeah. Okay, so do we, what, okay, go.
I was gonna say, or you could have an efficient experience and micromanage your Universal Horror Nights situation.
You can have an efficient experience, and like, at the end of it, like, you can go and be like, Horror Nights was fine. I kind of hate my dad, but, but he was scary.
You got every what scared you the most? My father.
Totally.
But you got every maze done.
We did.
Congratulations.
You did. You know, cruised. Yeah.
Dude, that's
every maze and Jurassic Park or World or whatever. So
get out of here.
Yeah, with a poncho. Mm. So hey.
Bravo.
You know.
Zach Sang Show.
Hey, beautiful human. Real quick, if you're considering going back to school, you should ask yourself the following questions. Do you need the flexibility to take classes on your schedule? Do you have college credits that you need transferred? Do you want to earn a quality degree from a world-renowned university? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Arizona State University could be the perfect school for you. Arizona State University offers 200 highly ranked degree programs, 100% online. You're going to earn the same degree as you would on campus from wherever you are on your schedule. Plus, ASU Online accepts most transfer credits. If you want more information, text my name, Zach, to 35517. That is Zach to 35517. So you can learn for yourself why the Wall Street Journal ranks ASU fifth in the nation for producing the best qualified graduates and why 87% of ASU grads are recruited within 90 days of graduation. That's a big number. 87% of the graduates, they get a job in 90 days. Learn to grow, learn to succeed, and learn to thrive at Arizona State University. To learn more about ASU online degrees, text Zach to 35517. That is Z-A-C-H to 35517. Knowledge is power.
Zach Sang Show.
Back to Hey Y'all.
Yeah.
When you guys are starting to create a record or you go into the studio, do you set like a creative goal? Like, do you strive for something, or like how does it work?
I think that you want, like, a lot of times we want, you know, like, yeah, you're always start out trying to make like Casablanca or Wizard of Oz or something, but sometimes you just end up with like Goonies or like Garbage Pail Kids or, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just, it's like, you're like, well, it's not going to have as big of a pop culture impact as we wanted, but we're still chasing something that's interesting, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I think that that's like the big overall goal. But at the same time, lots of things that we bring in or somebody brings in is not going to end up there. You know, like sometimes, you know, like I think about it in the terms of like you're making food for somebody, and like not everything is going to be like the main dish. There needs to be like the stuff on the side. And sometimes the, like, you know, jalapeno mac and cheese is like super fire, but it's just like not the main dish. You know what I mean?
But do you
so need- we're never trying, we never go in going like we're making the jalapeno mac and cheese. We're always trying to make the, like, I don't know, chicken cordon bleu or whatever. Like, I don't know any of this, but yeah, you know the vibe.
I vibe. How do you challenge yourself in the studio to keep it fresh? Because I feel like it must feel like I don't know. You've been doing this a long time.
Yes.
And you've been creating with the same core group of people for quite some
yes.
time.
How oh my God, Zach just called me old.
Like, okay.
What was it like season. In like the like 70s?
Tell me.
Was TV like in color yet?
Do you remember the moment it switched from black and white to color? Describe your feeling. But how do you keep it fresh? Because even now, like,
this is a great question, actually.
I've been with Dan for 8 years and it gets fucking
yeah.
stale.
And I think you run Thank the you. Risk of it becoming kind of Groundhog's Day a little bit, you know? And for us, because it used to be when we first started, we like fought over every little thing. And like, we also like did pranks. On, like all the yeah. stuff that you do as like a young person, you know, like where you're like, you know what I mean? And like, and we were more, you're more irreverent because you just don't really care about the rules or know what they are.
Yeah,
you know,
kids.
You're kids. So you don't care. So I think that like bringing in somebody like Wyclef is actually super helpful because you stir it up, you know, yeah. it forces it to be a little weird and a little askew. We did the same thing. We worked with Babyface. We did this, you know, like when you, I think sometimes when you add a different perspective to the mix, it forces you to, because the rules change all of a sudden. You know, like we're making like a ska song with surf guitars that kind of has a drum beat that sounds like the thing you do, you know, or whatever, which is kind of wild.
But that one additional collaborator could really change the way the room works and the song you end up getting.
Totally.
What's the biggest difference?
Well, thankfully, we're never in the room with each other, so it changes the way the emails look.
Is that how?
No, I mean, we are, but like...
Is that hard to craft a record through email?
I think in some ways it's easier to me because I think when you're emailing with somebody or texting with somebody, it forces you to be a little more upfront with what you're saying. You can't like really like because
you can't beat around the bush.
You can't really, you know, like you're trying to get it done. You know what I mean? And I think that sometimes, so the thing that I've noticed with bands, at least our band and other bands that I've like recorded with, is that when you are in the room, sometimes you get down the rabbit hole of like putting like effects pedals on this thing, and then all of a sudden, and you're like, it's late at night, and you're like, this is a crazy idea, like this bridge is insane, and then you listen to it the next day, and you're like,
what was that?
What was I thinking? That was so, like, that edible kicked in far too early. No, but so we do both, you know what I mean? So we do, like, we'll go to, like, we usually will start it not in the room with each other, and then we, once it gets going, we get in the room.
Got it. Yeah. So, like, who usually starts with the idea?
It goes all different ways. The most common will be, I'll go to Patrick and be like, what if it's like this thing mixed with this thing? And he's like, that doesn't make any sense. Because my brain just doesn't really work correctly.
Okay.
So he'd be like, that doesn't even make, you know, like you can't mix like this and that. It doesn't make like music theory wise sense. But then he'll like kind of put it together and it makes an odd version of whatever it is, you know.
But that's... team. That's
yeah.
Collaboration.
Totally.
Believers Never Die. So Volume 1 comes out in 2009. That's your first best of.
Yes.
Your biggest hits. Greatest hits. Yeah. Jesus Christ. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's weird because I think that it's like a little weird as a band to like talk about greatest hits. Like to me, it's like when you go to a restaurant and you're like, what's the most, like, I was just in Destroyer, that restaurant right over here. Do you guys know it or no? I don't know. It's Culver City. You should go check it out.
Okay. Destroyer?
They comped me my meal today as long as I would talk about this on air.
Send them the receipt.
So make sure this doesn't get cut, guys. I was like, listen, I forgot my wallet, but you'll never guess where I'm headed right now.
The world famous Zach Sanctuary. What is that?
It's really good. You should check it out. But
You asked the question, like, what's the best thing on the menu? What does everybody order?
Yeah. So you asked the question, what's the best thing, or what does everyone order? Or, like, it's a sampler plate. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like the chicken nut. You know, it's like safe. It's that, and that's what like our greatest hits are to me.
But so now you have volume two coming. But is it going to be all greatest hits? Or is there going to be anything new in there?
So we're going to have Dear Future Self, and then we're going to have Bob Dylan, the song, not the guy. For anyone listening still who's made it this far, congratulations, and it's going to be the song, not the guy.
Uma Thurman's going to be on there too.
There's
there's rumored track listing, or is it confirmed?
I don't know. Let's confirm it right now.
I mean, let me whip out my computer here.
Yeah, please.
I know Uma Thurman's on here.
Yes.
The Phoenix.
Yes.
Alone Together.
Yes.
Young Volcanoes.
Ooh, yes.
Centuries.
Yes.
Light 'em Up.
Yes.
Huge hit. Needs to be on there. Uma Thurman.
Yes.
Big one. Out of all these records, Champion.
Yes.
The last.
What did you say? Out of all these records, Champion?
I was starting a question that kept going down the list.
Yeah.
But out of all these records, is there one that's like that the success surprised you?
Well, the immediate one I would say would be, and I could like go through this and talk in depth on all these, and it would be dorky and annoying for people.
But I love it.
It would just be like me and you at the end of the day.
Everybody leaves. There's one light on.
Why are they just sitting here in Uggs? I would say Light 'em Up for sure, in the way that like, I remember playing it for people before we put it out, and it was really polarizing. People were like, hair metal scream is kind of weird. And then other people were like, this is so heavy. And I think we thought that it could be like a cult thing, but we didn't think that there was going to, we didn't think about it in terms of like, oh, it'll be played on like the radio and stuff, and you'll go perform at places, you know, like at wherever. And
it,
so
it was a mainstream hit.
Yeah, which is kind of weird. So we didn't think about it in terms of that. Yeah.
Have you ever throughout this creative process started the process striving for a mainstream hit?
Yes.
And what ends up happening?
Those songs are have usually been forgettable, I think. Like, whenever we've been like, oh, this song seems like it would, like, sink really big, or, like, let's write a ballad, you know, or something, it just never, it does not work. Any of our songs that have ever been, like, quote-unquote hits have not started as, like, this is going to be a hit.
Because, like, you work against the universe. Like, you ask for it, but you don't, I don't know, it's weird.
I think so, and I think our band specifically, we sit in a really weird lane, and so a straight-ahead song has never just really worked, you know what I mean? Like, when we are like, oh, this song would work for this person or something like that, it just doesn't. So we don't even do them anymore. Or if we write them, we like try to give them to people or whatever.
When you think of the lane that you're chilling in, do you see Green Day and Weezer right next to you?
I don't think so. I think they're like in a helicopter above us avoiding the traffic probably. But we'll get there. I mean, I think that we're just like, we're 10 years, 12 years behind both those bands. So, like, I think we'll get there eventually, maybe potentially, but, like, no. I think, like, that's something we're striving for, kind of. We're like the car that's, like, driving on the shoulder trying to, like, cut across the 405. Like, people are like, that car, that guy's not getting off here. He doesn't have a flat tire, just driving with the hazards on. That is us. That is our lane.
But in a... Then to be on this Hella Mega Tour is a big deal.
It is. It's wish fulfillment. You know what I mean? Like, Dookie was a seminal album. You know what I mean? Like, that was such a big thing for us. And our band wouldn't be what it is without it. And I remember when Buddy Holly, the video came out, I was like, this video is, like, crazy. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
What do you think those two groups represent to music?
Green Day... to me, has written these songs that are like, there's big songs, and then there are these songs that are like generationally big. You know what I mean? Like when I saw them play like, you know, Basket Case the other night, you know, like I'm like, wow, this song is like just baked into people's DNA. You know what I mean? Like the people like now their parents listen to it and it's like in the kids' DNA. It's really wild to see. And like those are massive songs. If you get like one of those songs, you're super lucky. Green Day has like four or five of those songs, you know, which is crazy. And Weezer, I think that Rivers is one of the most prolific writers. You know what I mean? Like that guy writes, I don't know, a couple songs a day. I don't really know. Where's Eric Olsen? How many a day? He turned to me. We were doing a radio interview and the guy was like, well, this sounds like there's a lot of guitars on this. And he said, 100 guitars. I'm like, and he's not lying. There's not 99 guitars in that. There's 100 guitars on that record. You know what I mean? Which is pretty awesome.
He's amazing.
Yeah, pretty rad.
So what do you learn from being around Billy and Rivers?
What
do you take from that?
My take is like, there's a long game. You know, life is very long. It can be short if you like, it can be short, but like life is really long in general. And you have to play it as a long game. And that means like you can't chase things. And I don't think that either of them have chased. You know what I mean? I think that they've played, like when American Idiot came out, like now people in retrospect are kind of like, American Idiot makes so much sense or whatever, like that was like
people fought that.
Yeah, it was like it was counterintuitive at the time, you know what I mean? And I think that counterintuitive thinking made it massive, you know what I mean? It like was like this sleeping giant kind of.
When you think about their cultural impact and then you compare it to your cultural impact, are you what are you striving for? Is it that song that is passed down from generation to generation? But that could also be relative, right? I can argue that you have one of those too.
Well, I think it would be great if I was in the car. I was in the car with this Uber driver the other day, and he's like, "Yeah, you're in a band or whatever." No, it wasn't an Uber driver because he knew my name. It was a car that I got picked up from the airport at, and he knew my name. And he's like, "So you're in a band or whatever, you know, whatever." And I'm like, "Yeah. What's it like?" It's like, it's kind of like Green Day. And he's like, well, that'd be nice. He said, well, that'd be nice to me.
That's humbling.
You know what I mean? And then like, so I just think at some point your name becomes your descriptor. So like, if you go talk about Metallica, you just say Metallica sounds like Metallica. And that is that your name is the descriptor. You've become this thing.
That's the genre.
Yeah, and I think that that's a cool thing to strive for. There's lots of things, but that's one of them for sure.
Way to put it, because you do become, it's true. Like, it is the genre. You are...
No one calls Metallica like thrash metal. Just like, Metallica just sounds like Metallica.
What do you think people call Fall Out Boy?
That'd be nice. I heard it. You know what I mean? No, I think we're getting there. I think we're on the path. But I think it's like thinking about it in terms of like, it's a long game, and you got to be aware of, like, at this point, you have to be aware of what your legacy is, what your musical legacy is, and think about that and take that stuff into account, I think.
Yeah, because you are at a very unique stage where you've had so many hits under your belt. I mean, you have your second greatest hits album coming, but at the same time, like you said, you still have decades left to keep creating.
Yeah, and it's a strange time to be at it too, right? Because it's a time where the chasm has been bigger between the old and the new. You know what I mean? Like, the old doing the old record cycles and not concerned about streaming and you know what I mean? And the new being like, what's an album? You know what I mean? Like, and it's like, we're one of those bands that's like really in between the two, and it's a really odd place to be. You know what I mean?
But also a great place to be.
Definitely.
Because if you can play to both.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a strength.
Yeah. Hard to play to both. Hard to play to even one, but yeah, for sure.
What is the hardest part about the change in terms of how people consume music? Do you feel pressure, even though you have a greatest hits album coming, is there any pressure to keep releasing new records to keep up with demand or the attention span?
I think there is pressure to do that, but at the same time, I think you got to do what's authentic to you, and it's really authentic to Rivers to write, you know, a song a day or whatever. And I don't think that that's necessarily true for everybody. You know, our band doesn't really work that way. And I think that so we live in this time where it's like inauthenticity.
I think you're close.
Yeah, we're close.
We'll go with it.
Yeah, we'll edit that. We'll edit that in. That's a word. Yeah. That's a word. Well, but like, I think that we live in a time where people care about likes and people care about how many people see these things, and it's not necessarily about doing things that are organic or authentic, or that's not necessarily what's rewarded. And I think we're actually at a time where you have to be super authentic, because that will cut through. You know
100%.
What I mean? That will cut through. And so do whatever. And that's like when we put out this song, like, we bought an ice cream truck, or like, you just got to do things that are like authentic to who you are, and I think people will give it a shot, at least, you know what I mean? And then if they like it, they like it, and if they don't, they just move on to whatever the other thing is.
Authenticity.
Inauthenticity.
Ooh.
Maybe we'll like...
Start something?
No, maybe we'll cut it up. We'll do that. We'll put the Destroyer ad right after that. It's all good. We're going to be good. In post, it's going to be fine.
Just this weird edit of your mouth doing one thing and then it's inauthenticity.
Wow, that guy sounds smart. Not even smart. He sounds capable.
You can get through it. By the way, like, you bring up a really great point. People crave true. People crave real. People don't want... I think now more than ever, people don't want a facade. They don't have time for bull squash.
No.
It's just not, I don't know. I don't know why people want real now more than ever.
Because the world is so...
Fake?
Yeah, and it's so weighted in favor of being fake, you know, and like...
Filters.
I find like lots of times, filters, and like you're out and people are like taking pictures of every meal and you're just kind of like, do we even like the food? Do we like it? I don't even know. Do we? It's like so Emperor's New Clothes, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like where you're just like, do we like any of this stuff? I'm wearing these sandals. Do I even like them? I don't even know. Do we like, you know?
You got 100,000 likes on
them. Yeah, I do like the sandals, but you know what I mean? Like, we live in an Emperor's New Clothes world right now.
So what is the future of Fall Out Boy? Do you guys have any idea?
I don't know. I would like to do, like, I thought for a minute maybe it was like, it's got to be something different. And I thought for a minute maybe it was like scoring a movie. But Fall Out Boy, like the movie, because the only thing we kind of agree on as a band is like cinematic stuff. And the movie lies somewhere between like Napoleon Dynamite and Drive. And that's like a concept that no one, we say that to people in meetings and they're like,
I love it.
Yeah, they're like, I have no idea what you mean.
I'm picturing a nerd who can murder people and drive fast cars.
Yeah, it sounds, that's about right.
But also has a llama.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds, there you go. Sounds, yeah, that sounds about right.
Llama that sits in the back of the car.
And holds the gun to the head.
100%.
Yeah.
Spits acid.
Yeah, but I think that it's something like that. It's got to be something that forces the perspective change. You know what I mean? It's got to be something that, like, makes us think outside of the box. And I also think that it's not, we're out of our record contract for the first time in 15 years, 12 years. So, like, it's...
What does that mean for you?
Yeah. It means that if you had $1,200 under that table...
Okay.
We could, I don't know. My lawyer's not here. I could sign something.
I want to sign you to my label.
I don't know. He pressured me. No, I think that it's just freeing because we're in a time where being able to move, be nimble and being able to, you know, if someone was like, let's do this song together, let's do score this movie, is a time when it's you want to be able to do that.
Yeah,
you know?
You can and not even think about it or have to go through a ton of red tape that kills time.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you have creative freedom.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty special.
Scary. It's scary, but cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys have changed a lot from the beginning. Would you ever go back to what you used to do? Like, would you ever scream on a song again?
Would I ever scream on a song again? Maybe. I don't know. If we can get like my kids like messing around at, you know, 6 a.m. on a Sunday outside my window and record it, 100%, we can make that happen.
You're gonna yell at them? This authentic scream.
Yeah, it's like, wow, he's just telling people to be quiet.
Get off my yard.
It's not light out yet. Why does he keep saying that? I think that it's hard to go back. You know what I mean? Like, I know we talked about this. Is a good question. So we talked about it before, and it's like, it's really hard to put stuff like back in the box and re-experience it again. You know, like you look at bands that try to like, and artists that try to recreate their first thing, and it's like, well, you can't play like speed metal because you like own a pool now. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to sound weird, you know? Like, and so I think there's that. I think it would be cool. I do think that revisiting your roots and reinterpreting them, I think that that can be really cool. You know what I mean? It's just going to sound different now because it's like, it's 20 years later. So it's just going to be a different thing.
Is there any fear that somebody else might go back and do it? Meaning like history tends to repeat itself.
Totally. It does. Yeah.
And people are going to look to you guys for inspiration because you laid an incredible freaking path.
I think it would be very cool to do that. Honestly, I think that that's one of the great things that you have to tell people is like, A, these albums and songs exist so you can always listen to them. And B, there are people who are doing them and doing their interpretations of what they are now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or will do them. And like, that's cool. I think that's awesome. I think that that's what, I mean, when you look back at legacy, that's something that's really cool. Or when someone comes up to you and is like, Andy Hurley's the reason I play drums or something. It's like, that's freaking cool. You know what I mean?
It's tangible. It matters. You literally shaped somebody's life and you kept that genre and that sound of music alive and going.
Yeah.
It is essentially cool. Bigger than you.
Yeah, it's definitely bigger.
But
So
are your songs.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, some of them are. Some of them, like, you go and people are like, because, and we talk about this all the time, like, my buddy said it to me, but, like, no one remembers, like, a breakup or whatever by, like, the free game they just downloaded. No one's like, oh yeah, I like downloaded that game and that's why I like remember, you know, like you set it by like music and by art and things that you love, you know what I mean? And so like that's pretty cool to be like that much of a texture in someone else's life, you know what I mean?
Woven right in there.
Yeah, it's pretty rad.
What are you thinking?
Well, no, the reason I asked that is because, you know, I love songs like Saturday and I Slept With Somebody from Fall Out Boy and all I got was a stupid song.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's those screams in there that remind you of like middle school or something when pop punk was huge. And I was maybe they could get back to that. But like you were saying, it may not be authentic to you guys anymore.
Yeah, I just think that it would come, like lots of times, it's a thing that we've thought about and talked about. And like we'll do versions of those songs. But whenever we do versions of those songs, no one ever is like, that reminds me of Take This to Your Grave. Like, that reminds me of, like, we do them, and people are like, oh, that's a cool song or whatever. I'm like,
yeah,
oh, okay, because
them.
We're different, you know what I mean? And we're, like, we're at a different place, you know what I mean? And so I think that you can do versions of it, you can do interpretations of it, but I think going back, it would feel a little bit like a parody. You know what I mean? Like yeah. where you can speak to like Napoleon Dynamite, like when Uncle whatever his name is like throwing the football and he's like, I'm like a quarterback, you know, whatever. And you're like, it's like it yeah. feels a little weird when the like when you try and force that, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, do you think you guys have gotten almost like too successful with what your current sound is to kind of go back to that and reintroduce like your audience to it? Because like some of your big fans or the people that come to your shows may not even know that first album.
Totally. Well, we try to always, like when we're doing a set list, we do try to take it all into account because this is what it is, right? So when art's been going on for a long time, your entry point is where you think about it. You know what I mean? So like lots of times I'll be looking, like I go deep on Star Wars and people, all the references to Star Wars now are the prequels that at the time when I was really into Star Wars, people were like, the prequels are lame. It looks bad. The CGI is bad and like whatever, you know, but now all the references are like the news, you know, because it's always like people hate the new thing. So all the references are like, why can't you just make Star Wars like the prequels? You know what I mean?
Yeah, they went from being the ones that were hated to
being
the ones that
they're loved. Adored, you know what I mean? Fan favorites. And I think that, so it's your entry point, or you look at bands or whatever it is that's been around for a long time, you know what I mean? Like, people are like, you know, why won't these guys just do like the first week of the show, you know what I mean? Because that was when they were like so free. But you're like, we're doing versions of that, but like, it's just different. It would be weird if we went back and like tried to force it. We can just do kind of like versions, and so we try to do versions of it. I think our best case is like creating a set list where we put those songs in and we create playlists where we like slide those songs in. I don't think we don't like write differently in terms of like this sound would be, because I think there's a fresh way to do all of it, you know what I mean? Like you could go and be like, we have a song that has just guitar, and there's a way to do that song freshly, and you could have like, you can for sure have a top 40 hit song doing that. If that was what you were doing by design, there's a way to do it. I just think that like, to me, it makes the most sense to do things that are authentic to you, you know. And I just think it's like, there's a certain freedom to being like, we're just playing punk rock in our friend and our guitarist's like parents' attic, and we're just like smashing stuff, and they kind of don't know what's going on up here. Like, there's a freedom in that, and you just, it's hard to like go back
and
you
to can't duplicate put
the, yeah.
that.
Yeah, like, putting the toothpaste back in the tube is like impossible.
I get it.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
As a fan, I hope you're okay.
No, I'm okay.
Like, I get it. No, I get what you're saying. It's like, it's an interesting like thing to walk down and to kind of like figure out. Because like, we've tried to even like kind of write those songs, and like I said, we play them for people, and they're just like,
it's not real.
It's not. Well, it's just not. They're just like, oh, okay, it's a cool song. And I'm like, damn, I thought they'd be like, this is like a throwback song. And they just don't say that.
But I'm telling you, the entry point makes the most sense.
Yeah.
And I think when you're talking to so many new people every single time your record's on the radio, or every time you're out somewhere or at a show, I mean, you're right. Like, people, their reference point is only what's in their ears at that very moment.
And for me, yeah, totally. And for me, a great, like, if you look at like a band like The Clash or David Bowie or whoever, like people who started eras and then changed. And I remember at the time, or Metallica or whatever it is, at the time with some of those artists, I was like, so those other ones were early for me, Metallica wasn't, but like I was like, oh my god, like why won't you just do it like this? And now, you know, 30 years after that or 20 years after that, I think I'm able to appreciate them as artists because they did change and they didn't do the same thing. And I think if they had done the same thing, it would have been harder for me as a now 40-year-old, but like when I looked at it when I was 30 or whatever, like being like, oh, this is cool, I can listen to this as like a grown-up. Whereas if they just stayed and done the same thing, it would be like harder, I think, for me to have done that. You know
wouldn't
mean?
Have grown with the music.
Yeah, if they it allowed me to grow, you know what I mean?
Yeah, if they would have been stagnant and stifled their growth, you essentially wouldn't have grown as well.
Yeah. It's tough to be a fan though, man, because people will ask you to like love one thing, like completely, and then they move on to the next thing, and you're like, just do the thing you told us to love. You know what I mean? It's hard. That stuff is hard, honestly.
But it is.
I'm gonna say, I think you guys have changed a lot over the years, so that might contribute to why you're still around selling out arenas. Because if you think of a lot of those bands back then, I don't think they changed, and you guys have, and you still are growing the fan base. Like, I mean, think of like Senses Fail, Hawthorne Heights, all those type of guys.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Because I never set my, like, I never, like, try to look too much. It's so hard to compare because everything's always different or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, like, I think that we got lucky in the way that, like our band has genre has always been like a weird thing for our band because like we were into metal and we were into hip hop and like whatever. And I think we got lucky that we like timed it accidentally, like where we're in a world like my kid, my 10-year-old does not care about genre. He just like likes songs and goes different genre to different genre mm-hmm. or whatever. And you like look at like Post Malone or whatever, and I'm like, this guy is like
everywhere,
all over the place.
But
you know what I mean?
But that's
and it's
art.
Cool and it works. You know what I mean? And it's like a it's having a pop moment right now, which is wild.
But you guys are the same way. A collection of different genres sounding different than the rest. I think that's what lent you guys to a very easy mainstream sound right out the gate.
Yeah.
Right? It was a kind of combination of everything.
Yeah.
It wasn't...
Eric Olson said we were not easily mainstream. Listen to that laugh. That laugh is like...
Yeah. Like hundreds and thousands of hours of calling the same PD.
All right.
There's pain.
Wake up!
There's pain behind that laughter.
Totally.
One of my favorite titles of all time... from you guys, either song or album, My Heart Will Always Be the B-Side to My Tongue.
Yeah.
Is there a title? I know we started with titles. Is there a title that you're particularly proud of? The creativity that you put out there?
I think I mentioned a good one.
Yeah. I liked... there's a couple ones that I liked. And these ones I think people maybe know, but like our lawyer made us change the name of the song so we wouldn't get sued. That was a true story. We had... there was this like... there was this, I don't know if it was like a made-for-TV movie, but it was about the Temptations. I think it was. But maybe it was like a VH1 type movie. And there's a moment in the movie where David Ruffin steps up and he's like, I'm David Ruffin and these are the Temptations. Like, he's like, I'm the guy, you know?
Yeah.
So that was the name of the song. And the lawyers from the label were like, you can't do that. You'll get sued for that. Like, you can no longer, because of Rosa Parks, you can no longer name a song after something that is not is not part of the song, integral to the song itself.
Interesting.
And so we changed it that. I remember when we put out Thanks for the Memories, it was immediately following our radio guys being like, you can't do the long song titles. The DJs like cannot say the titles. So we were like, cool, just take out the vowels.
Thanks for the boom.
Yeah. So that was fun. Like that stuff is just fun. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's great.
I've actually always wondered why it was Thanks for the Memories without the vowels.
Yeah. It was a direct reaction to them being like, the titles are too long. We're like, let's make them super short.
But it doesn't change the way they say it.
No.
They still have to say Thanks for the Memories.
Yeah.
But there's no other title for that record.
That record, what was it called? No, it was Thanks for the Memories.
Always, right?
Yeah. That was like, Thanks for the Memories.
That song is so good.
That was an interesting song where we went in with... I remember after we put out From Under the Cork Tree, we were at that movie, Josie and the Pussycats, and the music for that movie was insane. It sounded like punk rock written by somebody who'd never really like been told that punk rock can't sound like this. So we were like, who did the music for this movie? They were like, oh, it's Babyface. Like, oh, Babyface, dope. Okay, so we called Babyface up and we were like, we want to do the next record with you. And he was like... that's cool. You can afford to do two songs with me. And so we did one of the songs we did was Thanks for the Memories. And it was one of the cases where he really elevated the demo. The demo was cool, but it was definitely like not a like hit song, you know, or whatever. And he elevated the demo.
So you went to him with something already finished?
Yeah, a demo. But he was like, do mandolin here and do this, like, you know, like, and it was like crazy because it was like, you know, he'd be like, do it like this. And we'd be like, and this is like an example of like somebody who's like a truly extraordinary musician because he'd be like, do it like this. And we'd be like, you can't do it like that. And then he would sing it back through the talkback. And we were like, oh man, like this guy can like do it all. So like, you can't just be like, nah, you can't do it. You gotta like.
He can fight you on everything and win.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
What? So what do you learn from that session? Anything that stands out?
Yes. When we walked in, he had the soundtrack. He had the plaque for Bodyguard soundtrack on the wall, and it was like 22 million or something like that. And we were like, "Whoa, 22 million!" He's like, "Oh, that's an old plaque." We were like, "Wow!" And the first thing he said, because we were like, we'd been flown around and we were like being shown the world and you know like whatever, and he was like, "The first thing you guys need to know is never buy the jet." He's like, "Make a friend who's got a jet."
True.
It's like, cool, got it, okay. It was like all like little nuggets like that, you know what I mean? He was like, make friends with a private jet. It's like, okay, great.
But in that moment when he gave you that advice, he believed that you guys are going to be big enough to one day warrant a private jet.
Sure. Or he was like, this is like what I'm doing for the next like 4 hours and like... This is fine.
Yeah, he's bullshitting with
you. Yeah. He had a very, like, Yoda-like vibe to him, though. You know what I mean? Like, where he's, like, or Yoda or, like, Mr. Miyagi, like, where he's, like, imparting wisdom on you and you think you're just, like, painting a fence or something. And then you, like, walk away and you're like, oh, he was teaching us something the whole time. I get it. Okay.
Do you remember the other record you did with him?
I think the other one we did was I'm Like a Lawyer with the Way I'm Trying to Get You Off. I think that's the name of it. And that one, I don't know. Like, that was a like a long, interesting record, like where we filmed the video in Uganda, and it was like it was an intense, intense song. Yeah, I don't know. Not as memorable apparently because Zach had to write it down. He was like, "All right, this song. Okay, this is listen to this B-side later. Preferably while you're working out because you won't be paying attention to it.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's so nice that you think I work out."
Yeah.
Another great compliment.
Oh, thank you.
Really? What?
You were talking about songs with cultural impact. Did you ever think Sugar Were Going Down would have the impact that it's had?
No, not at all. For sure not. And it was a weird one, you know what I mean? Because we were like laughing about the like mainstream thing, but or whatever. Like when we put that song out, we got like no ads at radio. And people were kind of like, ooh, I don't know. And it was really driven by the video. Like this is hard because the world was a different place, but like, we had a video that was a weird one, and you can go see it on YouTube or Vivo or whatever. But like, we got pitched every video treatment for this video was like, all right, there's a bunch of people partying in a backyard, and somebody like falls in the pool, and then like everybody, you know, and like it's like, oh my God, like I've seen this video like a million times. So there was this one video that was like this weird like deer boy, and it ended up like really reacting with people, and then it went on TRL, and it went up TRL, and that like forced it to get kind of played on the radio because it was not getting played before that.
So TRL really created that record.
Yeah, it did, and pushed it and drove it. And MTV like and videos really drove that, like the early part of our career.
Do you miss that?
Yeah. I mean, it's different because you could just never – it would just be so different now. It's like one of those things where you go – you know, we talk about going back and whatever. And like I went on TRL last summer, and it was really cool. It was just so different. You know what I mean? People were like, is it just like it was? And I was like – no. This was like chaotic when it was TRL. You know, like it was chaos. You know what I mean? It was like shutting down Times Square. It's insane.
It was special.
Like, you know what I mean? Like Backstreet Boys like would shut Times Square down. That's insane.
But could that happen again?
Yeah. If it did, it would be different. It wouldn't be TRL now. It would be like a YouTuber or something, right? It would be like...
I think social media ruined that whole thing.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
But I also feel like music videos, they deserve...
It wouldn't be the same way. It would be something different. People always ask you... I don't mean to cut you off. No. But people are always like... You know, and people would be like, what is Nirvana? Like, what's the next Nirvana? And like, the next Nirvana is like not going to be wearing flannel and playing guitars. Like, I would tell people it's like Jaden Smith, because to me, that kind of is what it's going to be in a form like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Look, Dave Grohl said it was Billie Eilish, you know?
You know what I mean? It's different. Yeah.
You're 100% right. You're not going to know it essentially when it comes.
Yeah. It'll be different because nobody knew Nirvana when it came. You know what I mean? Dude. No one expected it.
I'm like weirdly convinced that Alec Benjamin is the next Bob Dylan, but maybe I'm dumb.
No, I don't think you are. I actually see him a lot on John Mayer's Instagram, and John is saying similar things, I think.
Yeah.
About his songs, like about the...
They're beautiful people.
Yeah.
They're like deep, and they're like fables, and it's... They're so gorgeous.
Because I think in the era of Bob Dylan, like you look at... You cast things in this perspective when we're talking about... We have recurring themes. This is which is really great about. We're doing like making something really special here because we got these recurring themes coming up. But like, you know what I mean? Like you're looking at things through a lens. So Bob Dylan at the time was like a guy who was getting called a sellout on stage because he was playing an electric guitar. You know what I mean? That's like, you know what I mean? Like it's just wild. Like it's wild to think about that in retrospect. And it's wild to think about like, wow. Talking about social media or something. You think about like when the Beatles are making like the White Album or like whatever, you know, like you think or Sgt. Pepper's maybe, you know, like, what would people be saying? They'd be like, dude, your music sucks. Just like play, you know, hold my hand or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's like.
But see, the fact that there was no social media allowed those risks to kind of flourish and find their home, essentially, because there was nobody, you know, I feel like it's a recurring theme where it's like, we crucify people very quickly. There's an instant jury and we don't care about anything else, right?
Right?
And I feel like that's kind of hit every facet of our world.
Right.
And it's this mob mentality.
Right.
So you release a record that is maybe a little bit more risky,
right,
creatively different than the last one. All it takes is three or four people to light a fire that maybe didn't exist before.
Yeah, for sure.
And then hold back the potential release or maybe make somebody think differently about how they choose to create.
Totally. I mean, I think the Beatles, you know, like I was listening to the Beatles with my 10-year-old the other day, and it's really wild, like, how many big, great songs they had. And you really got to stop and think about, like, what's the movie? Is the movie called Yesterday?
Yeah.
You got to really think, like, would... Because I see the debate online. Like, would people care about the Beatles songs if the Beatles hadn't existed and you put them out now? I kind of think yes, in the way that, like, I think that, like, if you play a Post Malone song on, to me, on any format, like if you play it on an acoustic guitar, whatever, those are big songs.
No matter
and I
what.
Think some of those Beatles songs, a lot of those Beatles songs, I think are very similar. But like, I don't know, because I think so much of our processing of pop music is based on the Beatles songs that it's like, without them, would you even think those were great songs? I don't know.
That is such an interesting conversation. Yeah. Like the first pop record you hear, that kind of builds your baseline of what everything else would sound like.
Totally. And your foundation for, like, these are great. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're big and they're also great.
This is what you think great will be from this moment forward.
Yeah.
What did your son think of those songs? Did he like the Beatles?
He did, and he thought the movie was really interesting, you know? And I don't think, though, like at his school, they're not, like, talking about the Beatles in the same way they're talking about, like, Travis Scott or something. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not driving culture in the same way. But clearly it did at the time. You know, people, like, wanted to look like the Beatles and...
But there was something so simple but also big about those records.
For sure. They were like it's one of those songs, like a lot of those songs are like, why didn't I think of that? You know what I mean? Like that's such the concept is so easy, but it's just askew, which is I think about that about Sia songs all the time. And I think I have the benefit of like talking to her and hanging out with her. So like I see her mind is like she has an interesting processing. But there's lots of times where I'm like, dang, it's just like a little twist. But it's like different, you know what I mean? It's like the perspective is off a little bit, and it like makes it makes people react.
It's wild because you're right. Like a lot of it is, why didn't I think of that? But the truth is, like
you couldn't have. You know what I mean? No, I couldn't have.
Yeah. What do you think the biggest mistake Fall Out Boy has made over the past few years is?
I think just being too precious about all of it in the way that like, you know, we put out a song. For the Ghostbusters movie, and people really reacted, and we were like a small part of this movie. You know what I mean? Like we were very small, and people had gotten so fired up. And I think you just have to put what you think and what your songs and your ideas are out there, and how people react to them is how they react to them. And you can't sit there and think that you're gonna have like a committee beforehand that like is like I like this but I don't like you know like that's not gonna you can't have like a think tank like that, you know. And I think we've been too precious about that kind of stuff. I think.
Do you mean in terms of not wanting to release music?
Yeah, and I think like being worried about like people reacting this way or reacting that way. And I think that the truth is that it's like a saying that it's a long game. You have to be able to like put who you are and what you think and your music out there, and how people react to it is how they react to it. And in the moment, you can't really care about it as much. I think you got to like release it to.
But do you hold it to a higher standard today than you did before? Because essentially, like, I'm not saying that a lot. Before in your career, you put a lot of weight into people's reaction. But to your point of you're playing the long game. You can't kind of, it's harder for you to fix something. Do you get what I'm saying? It's harder for you to come back from something.
Right.
Because you have so much great behind you.
Right. Oh, for sure.
So you put more stock?
Yeah. And now you think about that in terms of like you put a song like My Songs out. And I remember the night before we put it out, I was like, we could just like not put this out and like the legacy would be what it is.
Yeah, because you don't ruin anything.
Yeah. But if you put it out, you can like damage the legacy. You know what I mean? And you can change how people think about the other stuff. Yeah. You think, yeah. But I think you think about it too. You can't think about it too much. You can think yourself out of things. You know what I mean? You can't think about that stuff too much. You have to like live. And I think about it in terms of like paparazzi stuff. Like when they're like out and about, and I'm like doing stuff. I'm like, I just, you know, like. And there was a time when I was like so worried that like, oh, you look like dumb doing this, and you look dumb. You know, and it's like, kind of like you just gotta like live your life and who you are, and not really worry about any of that as much.
Well, because that fuels authenticity, which is
I think so.
Genuinely why people care about you.
Yeah, I think so. I think you have to.
I mean, what is living a life that's not true to you? That's not
no,
living
I
at all.
No, I think you have to. You know what I mean? Like, I think you have to, and you have to, like, just keep being who you are, you know, and growing.
Cliche, but true.
No, totally.
So when you're putting the set, I want to ask about the tour. When you're putting the set list together, is it still fun performing songs like Sugar We're Going Down, like Dance Dance and Thanks for the Memories? Is it still as fun as it used to be?
Yeah. But I think that so much of that is based on the energy of the crowd, like how people react to that stuff. Like we added Hum Hallelujah back into the set on the last couple festivals we did. And it was a lot of fun because people reacted and it was big. And I think that when people don't react or there's more of a like, you know, like, or not, but like just like not a non-reaction, it's harder to because you feed off of what that is. You know what I mean? And so now I think you play those songs and we play them for like a generation of people who were like a little too young to have seen them the first time. And then we went away. And so people are like, they never got to see it. You know what I mean? So now we play those songs and it's like a group of people who are like, my older brother listened to it or whatever. Mm-hmm. My parents listened to it or whatever. And so they're experiencing it for the first time, which is kind of exciting. Which is honestly, when I went to Horror Nights last night, it's like way more fun to go with like two 10-year-olds who were like freaking out. Like when we were in the car on the way there, they were like, they had so much anxiety. And I was like, this is so much fun. Cause I was like, we're just going to like Horror Nights or whatever. But like they're freaky. They're like losing it. You know what I mean?
It's their first time.
Totally. And you don't know what to expect for sure.
And I think those songs represent an entire era of music. Like they're some of the biggest songs from the early 2000s in pop punk music.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's really cool. It's just like one of those things where like, I think that, you know, 10 years from now, you look back and you see how people, it's always, you're constantly not adjusting for history, but you constantly see how, you know, like you go out and people play like Mr. Bright Eyes or something. That's like the biggest song of that year. So when you play that, people freak out because it's like a timeless song. It's like those generational songs, you know, whatever. So it's
like when Panic sings, I write songs, not tragedies.
Yeah, yeah.
Couldn't get that one out. But when those first few notes are on, the whole crowd goes crazy.
People go crazy. Yeah, because it like represents like that. Like it stops being this song you put out on this album and it becomes this like moment in time for people where people are like, I was graduating or I was like, you know, like I was grounded, you know, whatever it is. Like it's like this moment in time in who you were kind of. Which is wild.
You have a ton of those. Obviously, what is it for you? Is there a record from Fall Out Boy that means the most to you?
The reason I was asking about the screams is I like a pop punk song with the random screams throughout.
Right.
And you guys just did that perfectly on some of those early songs.
That's so nice.
So that's what stuck out.
Yeah.
Thank you for complimenting his screams.
Yeah, that's so
He's
nice,
a great
man.
Screamer.
I feel like I like it's the same thing, the compliments on the workout. I was like, God, that's so nice.
I mean, screaming can't be easy. Sometimes I have friends that don't listen to music with screams in it, and they're like, anybody can scream. I'm like, try screaming and having it sound good.
There's
an art to screaming. I'm going deep here.
Dude, how did you perfect your scream?
From the diaphragm.
I think I just did it over and over again, and you hurt your voice, and then you learn how to not hurt it, and you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it, like, for me, like, I ever perfected how it was. I mean, like, to me, I'm always, like, deferential to Patrick because that guy, like, kind of can sing whatever and it just sounds awesome. He's just one of those guys that's, like, super talented at it, you know? So, like, I've always just kind of, like, been the backseat guy musically to what he does because he's honestly so good. Like, when you have somebody who you're, like, this guy's so good at what he does, why would I...
No, why would you...
Yeah, why would you mess with it? Like, you don't want to mess with the recipe, you know what I mean?
No. So you scream when you can.
Yeah.
You used to.
Yeah, for sure.
Good screamer.
Oh, thanks, man. That's really nice.
Now, you brought up Patrick. I've always wondered, how did, like, you become, like, the guy who talks for the band instead of Patrick, who's the lead singer?
Yeah. I don't think that Patrick ever really... If you hang out with him in any kind of setting, like, whether it's here or you go out with a group of, you know, 5 or 10 people... I wouldn't say introverted is the wrong, because I think he started with introverted and I think then he kind of like figured out the balance of what it is, you know what I mean? But he doesn't, it's just like, he doesn't have any interest in it. You know what I mean? He's good at it. You know, he just doesn't, it's not something that's like interesting to him.
Out of all the times we've spoken, he's only been around once.
Yeah.
But that's a great team though, right?
Yeah.
It's everybody knowing their strengths and weaknesses. And when you know your weakness, you're smart enough to let somebody else carry it for you.
Totally. Or like you just kind of be like, I think about it in terms of like when you're, if you were part of like a car racing team or something. Like, you don't like fix the engine if you're the driver. Like, if you're, you know, you don't put the tires on if you're like the engine guy, you know, like you just know what your part is in the assembly line. You know what
100%.
I mean?
100%.
Yeah.
Well, because it takes everybody to get it going and to get it out.
Yeah, totally.
Without one of you, it's clearly off.
It would be different. You know what I mean? It doesn't work in the same way, you know, but it takes a while to figure that out. You know, like over the years, you like, you trying to step on each other's toes, and sometimes you do step on each other's toes, and sometimes you try to step on each other's toes. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
that's
you figure
family.
It out. Yeah.
That's like family in any team that's in it for the long haul.
It's like brothers more than anything, you know, which is like a strange. It's like strange to be essentially on a submarine with like three of your brothers for like 20 years. You know what I mean? It's like a really odd, it's weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's this thing that's, again, bigger than all of you. That connects all of you no matter what.
Totally. And like, there's some things that like where you're like, only these three other guys would understand it. You know what I mean? But at the same time, like when you're like, want to kill your brother and you're on a submarine, like I promise you, it's very small. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, yeah, it is. It truly is. It's just like a weird thing. Like, just think about like going home to your families for Thanksgiving, but like you're with those people
every day
for like 20 years. You know what I mean? This is just like odd. Yeah.
I don't really want to think about it.
No.
Because it kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you learn quickly, like, or not quickly, but you learn how to give each other space and how to, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, you got to learn all that stuff.
Once you get into a really sweet spot, it's just comfort, right? Like, once you've seen everybody's everything.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Like, what more is there for them to know about you?
Oh, for sure. None of that stuff at all. But, like, I think at the same time, like, it's hard not to push each other's buttons. It's hard not to, you know what I mean? Like, especially when you, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just like such a, like, whatever you do with your siblings, it's like the same kind of thing. You know what I mean? It's like hard not to revert to who you were when you're like seven.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because
you
just, that's just how you interact with each other.
It's how it started.
Yeah.
Dan, that's going to be us. How does that make you feel?
Well, if we're successful as Fall Out Boy, then I'll take it.
One question, I mean, one of many questions. How did you decide about sampling something for this record? Was that a hard decision, because you added Hands Up to it?
Well, so I don't really know about the whole sampling thing because on this song in particular, because this came from Wyclef.
Got it.
And so I think that he had sampled this song, but I also think that I don't really know. I'm not like actually entirely sure because we were working together on the song and then we were getting ready to put the song out and then all of a sudden they were like, there's a sample. And I was like, oh, okay. What is the sample? I don't really know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
because that changes. I mean, that changes the financial breakdown.
Yeah, for sure. So the part, so if anything, well, yeah, if there is a sample, like it's in, yeah, because what we used a sample on Centuries, there's like a little sample on Light 'Em Up. So like, it is kind of what it is. Like most modern music, pop music has samples in it, you know, whatever.
Inspiration.
Yeah. But I do think that, yeah. So when we were doing it with Wyclef, they were like, oh, there is a sample. It's like, oh, that's cool. Like, I mean, it's like, whatever. It's not, you know, it happened before the part of the track that we worked on. So
it's the way it goes.
Yeah, for sure.
Dear future self, if you can send one line to your future self in this very moment, so you can listen to this, watch this,
yeah,
10, 15, 20, 30, 50 years from now, because I feel like you're going to be a guy who definitely gets his head attached to a robot.
Yes, totally.
Look in the camera and send an antidote to your future self.
What I would say to my future self is, I think it's going to be all right. Like, if we go to Mars or if we, like, shoot the stuff into the sky to block the sun a little bit or whatever it is, I think we're going to be all
bombs.
Right. Yeah. I think we're going to like figure it out. But like, regardless, like, you're going to have figured your stuff out. You know what I mean? Like, you're all right. You know what I mean? And I think that's like the point of the song. You know what I mean? Like, is being able to talk to yourself in the future and be like, you're going to be all right. You're going to like make it through whatever this is. Cause I think you write to your past self all the time where you're like, you should have like not worn this and like, why didn't you say this when they were mad or whatever. But like, talking to your future self is cool too. Like, it's cool to be like, it's gonna be all right. You know what I mean? Like, you're gonna figure it out. We will figure it out. You know what I mean?
Louder.
Whose idea was the Hell Omega Tour and what was your first reaction when you heard the bands that were coming together for it?
So we talked about, I think, well, I'll just talk about my band. We talked about doing a stadium tour. Like, what would be, because when we were growing up, there was like the Guns N' Roses Metallica tour, and that was a massive, massive, massive
tour. What was
the
name of that one again?
I think it was just the Guns N' Roses Metallica tour, or it was just the stadium tour. Well, look it up. Eric will look it up. He knows. He was probably on it. Were you on it?
I was working Metallica back then.
Yeah, yeah. I was working Metallica. I was working. That record worked itself, buddy.
He also worked Shakespeare stuff, yeah, too. Yeah. Big deal.
But so, like, this was a massive, massive tour. It might have been called, was it called the stadium tour?
It's called Guns N' Roses Metallica Stadium Tour.
Yeah. Them. And you can get those shirts, they're sick, whatever. But like, there was three riots on this tour, you know what I mean?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like there was a lot, like this was, there was like a, you want to know,
but by
this,
the way, that's culture.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, that was like, they were moving the needle. Like, Axl was wearing like a baseball catcher's guard, a kilt, and Converse, and an NWA hat. Like, way before you should be wearing it. Like, it was cool for like some white guy in a rock band to be wearing an NWA hat. Like, very, very cutting edge, like pushing culture. Yeah, so I think that we talked about the idea of there being some kind of rock tour, some kind of rock experience, because there is, we live in a hip-hop world. We live in a world that is driven by hip-hop currently.
Yeah.
And I think that there is some counter-programming to that. There is something, there are kids who want to pick up a guitar. There are kids that want to go and see Basket Case and Sugar We're Going Down and Beverly Hills, like all at the same time. And so we talked about it. I think Green Day had also talked about the same thing, about doing some kind of Monsters of Rock tour. So we kind of started putting together the idea of it, and for, like I said, it's like, for us, it's wish fulfillment. Like, we grew up listening to these bands. It's pretty cool. We knew Weezer. I knew Rivers pretty well. We'd like shot this weird like band hero commercial together years ago, and it was
that's a big deal.
The whole thing was like absolutely insane. The whole thing was insane. That's like a whole other story, but. And then we met Green Day, and we inducted them into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is like
it's a big deal too.
It's a big moment, you know what I mean? Like, you're inducting someone else into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's like crazy.
Green Day.
Yeah, Green Day, man, that's pretty wild. And so, like, the tour was a no brainer, but like, it was a big, big deal for us to even be considered like part of the conversation or like asked to be a part of it. Was pretty crazy.
Who is headlining, or is it a co-headline bill?
No. It is Green Day will be playing last at every show. It'll be Weezer, or no, The Interrupters, Weezer, Fall Out Boy, Green Day at every show. But it's going to be a rock and roll experience. Like, you can come there and you're going to hear all the bands, all four band singles and all the band, you know, like, it's going to be a big, like, rock and roll experience. I think it'll feel like a festival.
Feel like that's in. People want the festival vibe.
They told us. We did. We went into like a... What is it called? A group think? What
a focus
is it
group?
A focus group. We focus group this thing. And they were like, people want the festivals, guys.
Give us more than one. We're going to pay one price.
Stop talking about the Uggs and give us the festivals.
Hella Megator. Very exciting.
Yeah.
I love that name.
Yes.
Hella Megator. Hella Megator.
Hella Mega.
Hella Mega. Hella Megator. Go. Enjoy it. Pete Wentz.
Thank you.
You're amazing, man.
Thanks,
thank you.
Thanks for having me.
This podcast is part of the Zach Sang Show Podcast Network.